What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is podcast episode 148, and today we're going to be looking into people who play this sport live the longest. So we just found an article online that kind of outlined various different sports, you know, weightlifting, going to the gym, swimming, bicycling, you know, playing soccer, all this type of stuff. And it said people who do this sport specifically live the longest. And it was a little interesting. When Tom first brought this to me, my brain initially went to soccer just because, you know, soccer players run all day. They also sprint and they do steady state. It's a whole combo of things, but soccer wasn't the answer. So Tom, do you want to kind of just go over this study a little bit and see what they say?
Yeah. So one thing I want to point out from the beginning is this study is from Denmark and not America. So this, you know, the popularity of sports is going to be a little bit different. So the one that was the best, they looked at eight different like activities or eight different sports. Tennis was by far the best. Like, it wasn't even close. Badminton was a clear number two. Soccer was third. And then cycling, swimming, jogging, and calisthenics. Calisthenics is like body weight exercises. So yoga fills into this category. I guess something like gymnastics, since that's all body weight. You know, doing push-ups, pull-ups, that type of thing. That's all considered calisthenics. They were all about equal. And then health club activities, that's like, you know, what you do at a gym, lifting weights, treadmill, Stairmaster, that type of thing. The health club activities is clear number eight. And then there was like a big group tied for fourth. So my brain went, when I heard tennis was number one, I was like, well, that's a rich people sport. That's a country club sport. So, of course, they're going to live longer because they have all this money. So that was my initial thought.
Yeah, but your initial thought had nothing. Your thought didn't have anything to do with actual exercise itself. It was a whole different angle that this study didn't even think about.
Well, because do you think a tennis player and a soccer player, what's the difference between what they do physically? I mean, not much, right?
No, it's long sessions. I mean, the matches can last hours. They run, they sprint. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're constantly cutting, so you have to have pretty powerful legs to do all that change of direction. Do you think, like, the swinging of a tennis racket makes it so they live, like, their results were almost twice as, I think they were over twice as good as, like, soccer. So it doesn't seem like that would make that much of a difference, but what do you need to play soccer? You need a couple people and a ball and a field somewhere. Mm-hmm. You don't even need grass. You can play it on the street. Like, you don't need money to play soccer. But to play tennis, like, you need a country club, something along those lines. So I think that's why tennis was so far up on the list. The researchers from this study had a little bit of a different conclusion. They concluded that the top three are all social sports, and the bottom five are something that you can do by yourself. So they were saying that it's the social interactions, that community feeling of those group sports, that's what makes them better. And I do agree that doing stuff as a group, humans are social. We've talked about that several times in the past. I do see that there is benefit to doing that. Doing team sports, I played team sports when I was younger. I loved it. I do think that there are a lot of benefits that you get from that versus, you know, running by yourself. Because, hey, running by yourself, I've done a lot of that. And it's not always the funnest thing. Like, going running with a group is so much more enjoyable. It doesn't feel as much of a workout as when you are with a group. So I do see that there are benefits. I think that they are onto something. I just don't think that being social was like the biggest driver that like they did.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I agree with that. And I do like this study because the aspect of health that they're focusing on isn't the actual exercise. It's all the secondary stuff as far as being outside, getting some sun, getting some fresh air. And then like Tom just said, the whole social aspect of it. So we've talked about it a little more recently, but there are multiple angles to being healthy. It's not just about, you know, being physically strong and eating, you know, steak every day. There's like different things that, you know, kind of encompass overall health. And one that's usually lacking, especially in like today's world, is getting outside and getting together groups of friends. Like, it's just not that common. People are busy. And at least in America, it's not really part of our, I don't know what you'd call it. It's not really part of our like normal life. Like, most of us go to work, come home, and then repeat the same thing over again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just not very normal.
One thing that I'm really glad you brought up is outside. And it seems like our tennis, outdoors, badminton, outdoors, soccer, outdoors, cycling, outdoors, swimming. I mean, you can do that either way, but I'm assuming most of the time you're doing that outdoors. Jogging, outdoors. Like, all the top six were all stuff that you're going to do primarily outdoors. Health club activities was like clearly number 8 on this list, and that's stuff that you're doing indoors. So I'm wondering if that sunlight has some sort of factor. I didn't even think about that until you just brought it up. So that's probably another thing. It's like these people are getting a lot more sunshine than the people that are working out inside.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's 100% a big part of it. I think just as much as being in a group is actually getting some sunlight. And we know low vitamin D, which, you know, your body produces vitamin D from sunlight. So, but low vitamin D is chronic worldwide. Like, the majority of people out there are going to have low vitamin D, especially if you're in a kind of a westernized world, you know, America, over in Europe, stuff like that. People just have low vitamin D, and it's not a healthy thing. There's a bunch of health consequences from having low vitamin D. And yeah, we do have a podcast on vitamin D, so you can just search it up on the website. But vitamin D is important for a million things. And just something I can think of at the top of my head is the number one killer in today's world is heart disease. And you can think of calcification of your arteries as part of the health, you know, health heart disease umbrella. And vitamin D plays a real key role in telling our body what to do with calcium. So if it can just help a little bit, kind of direct calcium to where it's supposed to be, you know, just think of our bones and tendons, things like that, and not deposit it in our arteries, going outside and exercising at the same time is a great 1-2 combo.
Yeah, 100%.
And honestly, this is coming from a guy who trains by himself in like a dungeon with no lights. So I practice what I preach, and I preach what I preach. Well, no, what did it say? Do as I say, not as I do, you know?
Yeah, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So this is just an observational study, so it doesn't show cause and effect. I partially agree with their conclusion, but I think that there's a lot of factors that go into what separates the top three from the bottom five. And I don't think it's solely social. I think that's one factor, but I think there's a few other ones. A great follow-up study to just kind of like looking at their hypothesis and really seeing if it's true is just look at runners that run alone versus runners that are in a club and do all their runs by themselves and see if there's any differences in longevity between them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because then now you're looking at the same athletes. One are social, one are solitary, and just kind of see that.
And so both, I think, outside.
That'd be a great follow-up study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not one inside on a treadmill. Have them both be outside doing the same runs.
Yeah. I think, like, tennis was better than badminton because tennis, you know, that's a lot harder. You're working out more. The more power is involved, even though it's, like, a very similar sport. So I see why tennis was better than badminton. Another like interesting finding was that cyclists out of this group spent the most time exercising and swimmers spent the least time, but they had very similar life expectancy outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem like the more you work out, the better it is. Like, there's definitely a law of like diminishing returns. So, you know, more isn't always better.
Yeah, no. And I mean, obviously in the cycling world, it's pretty common to cycle like 100 miles. Like, if you're in shape and cycling is something you do, biking for 100 miles, you do that basically on like a random Saturday. It's not that big of a deal. But like, if you're going to run 100 miles, like Tom just did, you have to prep for months and it takes days. It's a whole different thing. So biking, people can bike for hours. It's just a whole different world.
Yeah. Typically, like, a lot of cyclists, Yeah, they're out there for several hours at a time. Like swimmers, you're not swimming for like much more than an hour if you're even going that long. So like, yeah, there's a big difference. And like lifting weights, I guess it kind of depends. Sometimes people go to the gym, they'll lift weights for 45 minutes and then go on the treadmill for a half hour. But yeah, it seems like swimming, you get pretty much a good bang for your buck. It's a full body exercise too.
Oh yeah,
so I think like, that's cool. Pretty good. If you're only going to do one, like that's probably one of the better.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think swimming is awesome. But again, swimming is pretty difficult if you're living in the hood or you're living in like a really dense city. You're not going to be swimming.
Yeah, you do need access to water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I think, but honestly, any study that has tennis and badminton as like one and two, you can tell there is some sort of, I don't know, would you call it a healthy user bias? Like having money, you know?
Yeah, I would say socioeconomic status, but yeah, that, there's definitely, you know, some other factors other than just the sport itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I think there is that angle there where people should, or at least I would expect these authors of the study to acknowledge at least, but if they're living in Denmark, this is their normal, so maybe they don't even really notice it. Like you can't see the sport, see the forest despite the trees. You know, if you're in that world, they maybe not even notice it.
Yeah. So, I don't know, this study kind of got me thinking. So I looked to see like a couple other similar studies to see like how they compared. So one study was looking at Olympic athletes, and that one found that endurance athletes live longer than power athletes. And I was like, okay, I can understand that. I mean, it kind of goes against the study that we were just talking about, because I would consider, well, I guess tennis and soccer, those are just kind of endurance athletes too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're more power than running.
Yeah.
But I would think power athletes are more likely to use drugs and probably not have the, like endurance athletes, you are very nutritionally driven. Like if you're an Olympic endurance athlete, your nutrition is dialed in. Like you're on a very good diet because every pound matters. If you're a power athlete, you're probably just eating whatever you can find. So I think like you're probably going to have a cleaner diet as an endurance athlete versus a power athlete. And you're much more likely to use some sort of performance enhancer as a power athlete.
Yeah.
So I think that's why that's there.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And I think if you're living in like the power athlete world, think of just a power lifter, you know, let's go with that. They focus on bench press, deadlifts, and squats. And in that world, mass moves mass. So you want to be as big as possible. So if you can walk around being 300 pounds, that's what you want to do. Even if the 300 pounds is sloppy, even if that means you're eating, you know, cheesecake every day, if you can keep that body weight up and keep your strength up, that's the goal. They're not worried about body composition. And honestly, they're not really worried about feeling good. It's just solely being that strong on that particular day, whatever, you know, the meat is. But endurance athletes, like Tom said, every pound matters. So being 300 pounds and sloppy is not beneficial to a runner at all. If you can be 130 pounds lean and mean, that's the goal. But that's, it's just completely different. And I think as far as like Tom says, the drugs, any power athlete that's worth their weight is going to be doing drugs. It's just a fact. And those definitely take years off your life. There's no doubt about that. So I think that's a very 1-2 combo. Why there's a difference there.
Yeah. Cause yeah, this study was looking at Olympic athletes. So the best of the best. So, yeah, there's probably a lot of drug use going on. I mean, it's not like endurance athletes don't do drugs. Like, there are, what's the red blood cell transfusion that a lot of endurance athletes, like cyclists,
get EPO?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's that. So, like, but I don't think that's as harmful long-term. I mean, it does have short-term effects. Like, you can get blood clots from doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I looked at another study, just to kind of get like another point of view. And this one looked at power athletes, team sport athletes, and endurance athletes. And this one found that endurance athletes live the longest, followed by team sports, and then power. So that social aspect at that first study that we were talking about looked at, it doesn't seem to be as much of a positive influence as the first study claimed. But there's a lot of like factors going on with that. Like we were talking about, there's that the money point of view. If you're doing a power sport, head trauma is going to be a thing. Like in boxing, that's considered power. Football is considered power. So, you know, that repeated head trauma, that's definitely going to take some years off your life. And yeah, just like the drug use that's going to be associated with those power sports, with those team sports too. compared to endurance athletes. So there's just a lot of factors to consider. But one thing is like very, very clear, and that's any physical activity is better than none. Every single study that I looked at, no matter what kind of athlete you were, you had better life outcomes than sedentary individuals. Yeah. So basically my advice is find what you enjoy and do that.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's great advice. And I 100% agree. Unfortunately for me, it looks like my preferred method of training is the worst. It doesn't really care what study you're looking at. But I think that's just, there's a bunch of other factors to look at personally. But if you can train, I definitely love to weightlift. And I prefer to weightlift by myself. Especially nowadays, being an adult, finding somebody to train around that's like literally not your next door neighbor is going to be damn near impossible. And I guess there are.
Well, what's the Venice Beach? Is that Muscle Beach? Uh-huh. The gym that's outside?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that seems like be like if you're going to weightlift, that seems to be like the most optimal way to do it.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a little bit of a community down there as far as, you know, having people to train with. I haven't had anyone train in a long time just because I've always trained at my house. It's been a very long time since I trained in a public gym. So I forget that's even a thing, like training with people, just because I really don't do it anymore. But yeah, if you can go to the gym and get some sort of community behind you, you know, people who you power lift with or people who you train together with, you know, your little gym family, then I think that definitely can, you can be, think of it like a sport, a team athlete type of thing, but you're still weightlifting, kind of combine the two.
Yeah, like CrossFit's pretty much that.
Yeah, CrossFit, yeah. But see, I don't even think of that because I've never done CrossFit in my life, you know?
Yeah, one of the problems with CrossFit is people, since it is kind of a team atmosphere or just a group atmosphere, a lot of people will kind of push themselves too hard and just get kind of like overly competitive with it. So the biggest problems that I see with CrossFit is that it's not CrossFit itself. It's just that people that aren't trained go too hard, or people like it too much, so they're going twice a day every day and are just completely overtraining.
Well,
so that seems to be the biggest issue that I've seen with that.
Yeah, I think I agree. That's definitely part of it. But I also think a lot of the CrossFit lifts are complicated. They try and do like multi-joint lifts where they're using basically a squat, a press, all in one big movement, like these Olympic style lifts. And not that I don't like those lifts. I think there's definitely benefit to doing those if you can. But man, don't start a day off doing some sort of snatch and clean. Like, you have to build up to that type of stuff. And I wouldn't have some, I don't know, 40-year-old soccer mom on her first day doing those type of exercises. But that's what happens in CrossFit. It's just complicated, and you're just asking to get hurt, in my opinion.
No, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Like, yeah, if you're doing those complicated, multi-joint, heavy, with a lot of weight, too, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot that can go wrong. Like, yeah, you really need to... Yeah, people probably don't work on their technique and get that down solid before they start doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I think, I mean, we've all seen them online on YouTube, like gym fails, like those videos. 90% of those gym fails are dudes or ladies in CrossFit gyms dropping bars on their heads because they just don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, that's another podcast in the book. I think just the end thing, like Tom said, just do something. I think that's the best advice you can give anyone because it's definitely better than nothing. You can find the study on the website, so tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.